Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, and of course, on video, it's Stock to Follow with Paul, full-time investor, equity analyst. And I've got to say, it's miserable over here. I've been in the sun though, Paul. See, a bit of a tan there.
You do look very brown, actually. Yeah, but where did you go?
I went to Tenerife with my father. It's a sad story. He's been going there for 30 years. Some people find that boring, but him and my mother went there for 30 years. My mother can no longer go because she's in care, so I go up with my father. And it's not a bad place to go and look after the guy, but he still thinks he's about sort of 40 years of age. He's not. He's 76. He had a stroke last January. He still wants to, you know, climb down the rocks and jump in the sea. And he can't, you know, his one leg doesn't work. So it's like, Dad, you are now 76. You've got to slow down a little bit. But his mind is not telling him that, you know? So,
I'm glad he's enjoying it. Why not? You know, go to a lovely place like the Tenerife and drink your eldest lad under the floor, which is obviously pretty good, but and get a tan at the same time.
I know, but he doesn't drink. He never has. Never seen the point of it. So before we came on, we had a feisty interchange because I said there's not many results out. I mean, I'm not talking macro. There's always macro, of course, non-stop macro we got all the time, and the Fed last night, we'll talk about that. But I haven't seen many results. I did see, in fact, Roslyn, which is one of your stocks, I did cover on the webinar last night, which what's your thought? In fact, cover that in
I mean, basically, that, you know, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly, isn't it? And this one, unfortunately, is the ugly. I've owned it for, what, now 3 years. When I turned the sort of clock back and I bought it, a big chunk of stock at the, probably, I think it was April, May of 2020, they'd just done a fundraise. And they've got this spend analytics platform, which is they've now rebranded Roslyn, that should have done really, really well in terms of, you know, helping companies with their productivity and improving. And it should be, you know, perfect for corporations to source product as well and all that kind of stuff. So the thesis was okay. And there was an unbundling opportunity with Langdon, which is the import-export business, alongside their integrity business, which they've just sold Langdon. And the idea with integrity was an unstructured data, so it's been able to use AI and to read documents and written text and all that kind of stuff, and to add to the number crunching of the spend analytics. So the thesis was fine, and I bought it at 5p, and now the shares this morning obviously are trading at less than one, so I've got that one wrong. And that just shows you, you know, you could think about things and logic, but reality doesn't always pan out. And I think my biggest mistake on it was that it hasn't been big enough to be able to actually execute its strategy. And also, I think they've just taken really too long in upgrading that sort of, like, you know, the Roslyn platform. Anyway, that's history, right? 3 years. And, you know, I've been cautious on it certainly for the last two. And I would say if anybody wants to consider getting in at these levels, it's extremely, extremely cheap. But likewise, it's very speculative. And I would say it's going to be pretty binary. You're either going to get a really good return or you're going to get wiped out. And I personally think what will happen is they're going to do a fundraise, and it all comes down in over the next 6 to 12 months. And it all comes down to what price they're going to do that. And if they can have, if the CEO, Paul Watts, who I've spoken to a couple of times and do rate, if he can actually convert some of his pipeline, sign some contracts, and he's done that already using, you know, with partners and stuff, if he can do that, then he can change the dynamics of that potential fundraise, and we could be off to the races and he could do really well. However, I would caveat this that they haven't done it yet. As in, like, you know, in any real sort of, like, you know, materiality, they are going into big corporates who are obviously extending their decision cycles, their purchase cycles. So it isn't easy to do this, even though their platform now is upgraded and seemingly much, much better. So what I've done is I've basically shoved my shares into a drawer, I've locked it, and I'm just going to just leave it there for 2 to 3 years. I can't get out. I've got too much, you know, sort of like, you know, shares to do that, or I can at probably about 0p. So I might as well just leave it in there and just play the optionality of having it. And I'd like to be able to say in 6 months' time, I'll be talking a lot more positively about it. But this really is in your sort of like your neck of the woods, Justin, in terms of micro cap. And it's sort of like, making a decision. Too small for me.
Yeah, no, well, listen, I covered it on the webinar last night, and I was looking at stuff, and so I've got a strategy in bear markets. The strategy of taking apart in bull markets you can be forgiven for making the odd blunder, and you'll be forgiven for it. But in bear markets, you really are taking the cleaners, and I basically looking at all different companies, and I said, look, the strategy here is if you're focusing on small companies, you've got to have growth. That's the most important thing. Mm. Companies have to grow. How do you measure growth? Essentially, it's top line, first and foremost. Then you look at other metrics, of course, beyond that. But first and foremost, the growth has got to be there. And I did jump into Roslyn, a couple of years back, and then I jumped back out.
Yeah, I think you jumped after me, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And then there wasn't any growth there. And I thought, okay, this new guy, I'll wait and see. And in this market, you can take your time. I mean, it doesn't matter. And my gauge for growth is 20% more top line. Mm. And that validates the sales or the service the company is providing. You know, I've jumped in on many companies that said, I love this product, I think it's great. But that's just an idea, concept, hoping it'll go well. The proof of the pudding is in the sales. And that's it. First and foremost, figures don't lie. Figures are facts. Everything else is opinion. And so, I see people on Twitter talking about certain companies that say, oh, this is going to be massive. It's going to be massive. All that is all opinion, complete opinion. And until you get the facts on the financial results saying they are growing top line, that means their service or product is in demand, full stop. And in this market, you've got to look for that growth. And evidence of that growth is in sales, full stop. And that's what you've got to be sort of ruthless, haven't you? Because you know a lot more about Roslyn than me, and you were saying they got a good product. But again, it could happen. They could blow sales through the roof next couple of years. But in this kind of market, it's unforgiving, absolutely unforgiving. And so if you're not delivering in something above expectations, the market just takes the legs from it. It pulls the rug from it. And it's hard work. And so, but that's always been looking for, growth coming.
I don't think I've just had my legs. I don't feel as I've had my legs taken from. I feel as though my legs have been blown off. My arms have just like been severed. And I'm just left with a head here. And so,
to be fair to you, you knew about the background of the business and all that a lot more than I did. And so you're a bit more confident then. I thought, okay, I can't. If you don't know anything about the sector, the thing is, you don't need to know a lot about the sector. If you just rely on financials, and say, okay, is this company growing? What's their margins? What's the forward sort of pipeline? All that kind of stuff. Then you can take it from that. But I mean, I didn't know a lot.
Yeah, I would say, there's two things there. You raise a really, really, really good point in terms of, what's the actual key KPI, and it's ARR and it's, sales, and they haven't been able to convert that. However, I would say you've got to then match it with the thesis. Is there a secular growth trend here in terms of SaaS software, in this case, in terms of spend analytics and supplier master file control and concentration and all that kind of stuff? And there is, because it improves productivity, improves decision making, delayering, huge ROIs for corporates if they implement systems like this. So the thesis is right. The financials weren't work. But if you get it the other way around, you get your financials right, but the thesis is underlying wrong, then you'll be buying value traps. So you've got to get both things there. I do think the point you're making, Justin, is top draw though, because when it comes to sort of like the rubber hit the road, unfortunately, Roslyn was off the road on this one, and it hasn't yet shown it. And I think they'd probably put their hands up, if I had the chance to speak to them, they'd probably put their hands up and say, through circumstances, we haven't actually delivered. But it doesn't mean they can't going forward. And as I'd say for investors, if anybody's in a big way like I am, well, I mean, you might as well just chuck it in a drawer and just leave it for a few years, which is what I'm going to do, because you're never going to get out, which is sad. If you're small and nimble, then if I had a really small portion, I would basically probably walk away and just say, look, basically, I've got this one wrong. I'm just going to forget it for my mental health as much as my financial health. Would I buy at these levels? Unless you've really got some broad shoulders and you're prepared to take some pretty big risks, I personally would move on because there's lots of better opportunities. Yeah. But it doesn't. I'm hoping that in 6 to 12 months I'll be saying something different. But that was the. When it comes back to your original question, results, that was the ugly one.
Yeah, so yeah. No, but listen, we're going to get a lot more of that, I think, over the next... Because people just think, you know, the markets in the economy are linked, but, it's a lag factor, of course, with the economy and the markets. But there will be company reporting, bad results for the next 6, 12 months, based on just costs and inflation and all that stuff. And so, again, like we talked about before, you've got to look at companies that are not going to get hit, in this environment too much in the next 6 to 12 months, because, some companies report won't meet expectations for a while. And in fact, they're looking at growth and all that stuff. I mean, the first nine sort of filters I look at when I'm researching a company, the first three is growth, value, and then profitability. And if you look at the companies, for example, you've done very well on recently, Equals, Crestchick, they've got growth, and they were good, very good value. And so that growth line, top line, is very, very important, especially in this environment. If they can continue growing in this environment, that's all. It doesn't matter about the economy because they're growing beyond that. It doesn't matter. So, it's very important, I think. It's not going to be easy for a long time, I don't think, for a lot of companies, It's going to be
No. I mean, okay, I'll just contrast, with another results. I mean, on the other side of the food chain, much, much bigger is a company that I own, SAP, which is the world's biggest ERP software provider. They knocked the ball out of the park in terms of their migration to cloud. And the CEO was saying that he's very confident on hitting his long-term strategic targets in 2025, which is going to be growing the top line at effectively high single digits for the next 3 or 4 years. It's coming through an operating leverage, and the shares responded well. So they've, despite obviously the ongoing war in Ukraine, which is not helping their bread and butter customers in Germany and across Europe, likewise is has meant they've taken a hit in Russia and the Russian, countries associated with that. But the shares, popped up. They've come down a bit because it obviously goes up with obviously the markets because it's well owned. I mean, we're talking of mega cap here with, Rosslyn is a market cap of less than about 3 mil, whereas SAP is on 112 billion. So, euros. So it's about 100 billion pounds. So it'd be right up there in the top of the FTSE. And that's one, to contrast it, it's good, solid. It's recurring revenue, 80% recurring revenue streams, generates a lot of cash. And when it comes to valuation, I mean, the share's currently traded at about 85, 86 p. I haven't really changed my valuation. I reckon it will be in 3 years, three or 4 years, around about 150 euros. So 50% upside, in that sort of period. I'd take that any time of the day, for a big, solid, large cap. And that's on the premise that the recession is shallow and not that protracted. It'll be finished in about 2024, and if that's the case, this kind of stock will be off to the races again in sort of 2024, 2025, when you see that operating leverage really hitting through. So I'm delighted with that one. I'll just hold that one forever.
Let's talk then, going back to sort of, like you say, it's largely macro, bigger stocks, move with the macro markets. And sort of the Fed meeting came out, and do you know what, as I was starting the webinar last night, I looked at 6 o'clock, the news came out on the hikes, and it was as expected, 0.75%, taking about 4% or the range. And the markets reacted quite positively at the start. They said, okay, that's expected, fine, all good. And then they came to the press conference, and then I looked back after the webinar, I thought, hang on, the S&P is down 2.5%. What's going on there?
Yeah, isn't that?
But yeah, basically saying they're going to keep it higher for longer. They said no pause or whatever, but the suggestions they may edge down to half, a percentage point. But like I said, they're going to keep it going until inflation it starts to correct properly, isn't it? So it's
it just shows you that the market is reacting to the macro and particularly bond prices at the moment, and it's a lot driven by the algos and the programmatic trading. And as soon as you get a few sort of major sort of statements from supposedly influential market movers like Jerome Powell, then the market does shift upside and downside, because he basically put out his statement, as you rightly say, which looked as though he was going to be more dovish and he was going to start hold him back on some of his rate increases. And then he started talking and about half an hour later, and then it tanked the market. So, you know, it just shows you that, and this is something, you know, to your credit, you know, you don't use leverage at all, and I don't use leverage. And it means that when you have those market wobbles, you can just live through it. You're not sort of like, you know, having been forced out as a distressed seller like the LDI pension schemes and stuff like that. But anyway, what it means is, big picture wise, is the bond market is basically now saying on the swap index that the US Federal Reserve will hit federal fund rates of around about, what, 4.6% by the end of this year. We'll peak out at about 5%. Sort of like spring of next year, and then that will then reduce down to 4.5% by the end of 2023. That's what the so-called market, the swaps market, is saying. But the Fed is still saying it's going to hold at around about, you know, 5 or 5.25, whatever it is, for a lot longer, until they get inflation to control. And that all comes down to our previous discussion: has inflation started to roll over? And most indicators are that has actually occurred. It just hasn't yet shown up in the figures in terms of housing and also in wages. But I actually think there is a bit of a principal issue here to a certain extent with the Fed, because, as you know, it targets two things. It targets inflation and growth. But both of those measures, the way it reads them, it's best indicators, are very lagging.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you're going to do forward policy, you know, it means that you're going to be looking at old data. And really, they should have been looking at other stuff to be able to move it, because it makes it quite, when you put out these lagging indicators as your sort of principal sort of guide rails for policy changes, then unfortunately what that means is that when they don't show up what they're supposed to show, is that you then struggle to react, you struggle to justify that reaction. They need something a bit more early warning that they can then point to and say, this is going to change it, because that would have meant they'd moved a lot quicker at the start of the year or even last year, rather than actually carrying on with their QE, which was stupid. You know, it was absolutely bonkers. Because it was optically going to be difficult for them, because the inflation that time is still low. Anyway,
the Fed, I think they've got a problem here, because they admit they're looking at lagging factors. Okay, unemployment is a lagging factor. In fact, the dual mandate is stable prices and maximum employment. Now those two will you know, come up, smack against each other soon, I think. And in fact, I don't know if you said Jeffrey Gunlock was on CNBC last night.
CNBC last night. Yeah,
he was saying that he sees basically negative interest rates going forward. He said if they hold too long, they can have a massively damaging effect on the economy. They have to unwind it. And if there's still, bits of inflation left, there's going to be a problem here, because if the lower interest rates, there's inflation there and high employment, so it could be a big problem. So, they've gone very fast, very quickly, and they don't know the actual effects of it. It's like I said, QE, they didn't know the effects of that, and we sort of seen what it's all about, a lot further down the line.
I actually think they did know the effects of it. They just couldn't. The problem is they're sort of like their hands sort of like strained as because of the actual, you know, their guide rails, their indicators they use. If you're trying to justify tightening or easing based on old data, which is what they principally use, then unfortunately you're not be able to justify it either way. You're going to be too late, but on both in and out. And that's really what's happened. And I actually think they need to change their indicators to say, and I know it's not, they may be very anecdotal indicators, but I think that's where they need to sort of like, get a bit more ahead of the curve.
Yeah, definitely. So everyone says, they're behind the curve, and now they try to get in front of it. And now people say, you've probably gone too far. And so they won't know that until the damage is done. Any other sort of...
A couple of others have had... this is crazy, isn't it? The rest of the sort of company news has been good. So we've had the bad, the good, and then we had the ugly, we've had the good, and we've had some pretty decent results as well. But the share prices have all gone south. And I'll start with one, with FD Technologies, which I own. It's about a 400 million market cap business that does sort of like, it's in three divisions. It's sort of key crown jewel is KX Insights, which is basically a real-time big data analytics platform that serves just about all the hedge funds and all the merchant banks around the world in driving their quant funds, because it just takes, it ingests massive amounts of data and turns them around in seconds, and is the only game in town today. In fact, it's so good that that Microsoft has adopted it on their platform as their own product, and that should start driving. Anyway, that division is absolutely flying. ARR, I think, was up 35, 40% or so, doing really well, and should continue that going forward, doing really, really strong. Their main sort of stay, which is their IT sort of consultant, not IT consultancy, it's basically financial services consultancy type business, helping large banks and stuff do their sort of like their know the customer and regulatory sort of software and stuff like that. That's still doing really well, generating good cash, good margins. So that went well. The only sort of slight issue they've got is that they've got also another separate one called MRP, which works in the advertising side, which does effectively helps corporates and marketing chief executive sort of on the marketing side to improve their advertising and conversion of their leads into firm sales. And of course, in the digital age on advertising, that one's actually struggled. So they're just right-sizing that to get that back to EBITDA sort of like neutral. But essentially, my fair value of the stock hasn't changed, and the shares have, you know, sort of came down. The shares are currently trading at about £14. My fair value is at £25. And Investec, I think, are on about 30. So this is an unbundling play here. But their main sort of like two divisions, KX Insights, which is absolutely brilliant division, world class, and the old First Derivatives consultancy business, which again is got good, strong recurring revenue streams. Both of those are humming. And I actually think, you know, in a couple of years, the MRP business will be flying as well, because it's got some leading edge technology and software in that. So again, I've got no problem with that. I'm happy to hold. And I did notice the CEO and the FD were buying SHIB shares after they put their numbers out. So that was positive. Another one I own, which is Active Ops.
You mentioned FDP. I can't remember when did you buy those before? How long have you had those?
Probably about start of the year, I think. Sort of like, you know, March time. So I've had
they went up, didn't they? I remember you buying
them. The business is developing well, but it just shows you that, you know, regardless of whether your company's doing okay and it's generating cash, doesn't matter, does it? You know, so everything gets treated with a sort of like, sort of like pretty much gets battered.
Well, I think a lot of people, investors, I mean, they don't feel safe holding stocks, do they? So they see a bit of liquidity in a company, they'll just take money out and they'll go to cash. So, yeah, it's hard work.
Active Ops is in a similar sort of area. It basically does SaaS software that helps automate back office systems like know your customer and the regulatory processes for lots of banks and insurance companies. And they're doing everything. They're growing. It's sort of like, you know, I think it's low single digits. They've got plenty of cash on the balance sheet. The shares currently trade at roughly around about 1.6 times sales. The share, they're on about 75p. Singers have got a price target of 108. And I actually think once this really sort of drives sort of like operating gearing, because it's at about EBITDA profit neutral at the moment, or just coming into break even towards the end of this financial year. And, you know, I think in the fullness of time, they'll be generating 20% plus EBITDA margin. So if you blow that through, plus with low double digit type organic growth, which is what they should be doing and they have been doing for some time, then I think this will be going to 150 in 3 years' time. So I can easily see this one, you know, doubling, even though Singer's only got a 108 target on it. And I've spoken to the CEO, Richard Jeffrey, and I'm very impressed by the guy. He seems to know what he does. He's the founder. He's the long-term sort of like, you know, CEO. And the same strategy is going to be applying. As I say, they're going to be starting to drive a lot of operating gearing and cash generation in the business over the next sort of like 2, 3, 4 years. So, you know, the shares have come down, but I'm happy to hold on that. 53 million market cap, over 10 million of cash. I mean, there's nothing to worry about on that one. I think the key thing is, as you rightly point out, that growth is coming through, which is great. And if they have an issue, or there's an issue with their customers or whatever it is, they've got plenty of cash on the balance sheet to get them through any issues. And what you don't want in this environment, when interest rates are going up, absolutely don't want is a company that's just highly leveraged, or one that has to do forced into a fundraise because it's going to be extremely expensive, or some of the financing isn't even going to be available. So I would stick into companies that have got strong balance sheets and can get them through this, hopefully, only a shallow 12, 18-month recession.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, say in a bull market, you know, it's easy to raise money, especially cheap money that we've had the last 10 years. It's easy to raise money. But you find now, like I think the old Warren Buffett saying, you know, when the tide goes out, you see who's naked, pretty much. So, and that's the thing, isn't it? Tide is out at the moment, and it's going to be hard for many companies. Cool. What's next, fella?
Yeah, the next one, which I own, which is Essensys, which is basically a software, SaaS software platform that helps digitize large commercial rental offices and properties and stuff like that. So these guys will put in all the sort of the broadband and the digital software to be able to manage the bookings, to manage the broadband, the telcos, the access, all that type of the logic controllers around on a large building. And they look after some of the largest buildings in the world, particularly, say, out in the States already. So they've got some fabulous client lists like CBRE, like Cushman & Wakefield, JLL. So all the big landlords. And what you've got, this long-term secular trend towards the your landlords, which used to put out accommodation and offices to, people like HSBC on 15-year leases. Well, HSBC want to reduce their footprint, and they want more temporary, more flexible type offices. And this works perfectly into what they do. And they're still seeing good, strong top line growth. The thing which has really hamstrung the company so far is that it's still, because it's gone on a high growth strategy, it's burning cash. Its cash burns about £1 million a month. They've still got 24 million of cash because they're obviously looking to grow, and they're investing in their VPN, their broadband, worldwide broadband platform to be able to support their particular customers. But I have spoken to the CEO and founder, Mark Furness, and he's absolutely on the ball. And he could make this thing profitable immediately because he's done it before. He knows what levers to pull, but it'll be the bigger opportunities to go after the growth. And then you get this huge recurring revenue stream. I mean, 90% of the business is recurring revenues, and that will then flow through. So at the moment he's using the funds to be able to support that. But if the board decided to accelerate that path to profitability and bring it in from 2024, 2025 into 12 months earlier, you'll see a huge re-rating. I mean, the shares trade at less than 1x sales for a SaaS software business with huge recurring revenue streams and great customers. And it's really the only game in town for this type of stuff. Most of these big offices are just served by people on spreadsheets or just pen and paper. So this is huge ROIs for its clients. And I could see, say the shares are on what, roughly around about 45, 50p or so. Singers have got a target price of £2. But I mean, I would say I could easily see this one triple. It could easily go to 150 in the next 3 to 4 years. And that would only be on 3x sales, less than 3x sales. And I could see some huge operating leverage coming through. But at the moment, because they're in the wrong place, they're burning cash, nobody wants to buy them. I could see this one really, really doing well over the next 3 years and just prepared to hold.
So that their target Singers there. What's that base? What metric is that based on? Because they do it
on a forward EBITDA multiple.
Okay, all right.
I think it is anyway. All these are balanced level, but and that obviously assumes the operating leverage comes through in future years. But that one, it's run by an ex. The business was generated when it was half the size. Was very profitable and generating a lot of cash. It was just a UK business. It's the reason why it's become unprofitable and burning cash is because it's extended its footprint into Europe, but primarily into the States and also into Asia Pac. So that it's investing, basically. That's what it comes down to. And the market doesn't like that approach. If it could accelerate the path to profitability, then clearly the shares would do a lot better in the short term. But you may not get to that optimum level of growth whilst they're really there. I mean, the harder economic conditions is actually playing to them, because they're one of the few which is well, which within this operator in this area that's well funded. And, you know, can really sort of like, you know, grow and accelerate that growth, whilst the other, a lot of other smaller one pop, you know, sort of mom and pop sort of like software platforms are really going to go bust or tentatively just not be able to sign any deals with the large, you know, corporates who these guys are targeting.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is while they're doing that, they've got a tump load of cash, haven't they? That's the thing. Mm. And so this environment is not kind on companies that need cash.
Yeah.
Cool.
Another one where they got baby in the bathwater, which is big sort of ticket, is Infineon Technologies, which is that chip, you know, business out in Germany, market cap roughly around about 32 billion euros. And they haven't come out results. They are doing it in a couple of weeks' time. But the shares have been sold off on the back of, obviously, the softness in all things chips. But these guys, this is where you really know about the companies, you know, and these guys are in automotive. They're, you know, the chips, if we're going to automotive, electric vehicles, Internet of Things, and that's 90% of the actual turnover, the actual business. They've got very little consumer exposure on the chip side. And the shares have been sold off because of obviously the slowdown in things like smartphones and PCs. But there was the reason why I mention it is that one of its biggest competitors, ST Micro, came out, knocked the ball out of the park, and they're in the same sort of spot, and they still see really strong demand. And I mean, the last update that Infineon had up there, that their sort of like fiscal Q3, I mean, their order book had grown from 35 billion to 42 billion, which is about 3 years' sales. And yes, you could get some double ordering, but frankly, I mean, you know, it's high margin. It's absolutely sorted. And you still see it on the automotive side. A lot of car manufacturers, OEMs, are struggling to get the chips. And these guys, they're just shoving as many chips as they possibly can out of their facilities to be able to service these guys, because they're just about the very specialist into that power management. That's why they're used in electric vehicles and Internet of Things, because they can manage the power efficiency of those where you want low levels of power. So for electric vehicles, it extends the life of the battery, and for IoT, it extends the life of that, you know, in that device in the field. That's why they're so good, is that power management. And then the number one game in town for worldwide power management chips. So anyway, they should have a decent number in 2 weeks' time. Again, it's, you know, sort of like it's a dog sector, but in 2 to 3 years' time, I can see that one changing. I mean, can you see electric vehicles changing? I can't.
Exactly. Do you know what? It's a hard market. You know, I mean, very. I mean,
I haven't noticed, Justin.
Do you remember a while back when you had, you know, a bit of cash on the sidelines? It's almost one of the things I find it hard to hold cash. You know, I always want to deploy it, and in this market, you can sit back and wait, can you, with cash, and just think, okay, because things may get cheaper. But I mean, you know what? We're not far off. I mean, if you look at, you know, close to peak inflation, I suppose, you know, close to peak interest rates, the market must see that as a positive sooner or later. You know, at least they know the size of the monster they're facing here, rather than certainty of how far it would go, where's terminal rate and all that stuff. So, you know, and like I said, the markets performed worse 6 to 12 months before recession. They performed better during and definitely better after. So it's a question of saying, are we in recession? We probably are. So it's not going to get any worse as long as we're close to those peak inflation and rates, is it really? I don't think it'll get a lot worse, you know?
Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, the big picture is sort of like, you know, when those macro trends do finally roll over, that'll provide a big sort of trigger, a big catalyst for the market rally. I mean, you saw that last night when the market thought that it was rolling over, then it sort of, you saw a jump, and you've seen it over the last 3 or 4 days heading into the Fed meeting that people are speculating they're going to actually, you know, so you see how important that lever is into, you know, sort of improving the multiples and the ratings of stocks. You saw a couple of days ago with the Chinese there was rumours over Reuters that they would relax their zero COVID policy. Look how that put a rocket up, sort of like everything in Germany with the big exporters there, oil and gas and, you know, sort of commodities and stuff like that. So that's another massive lever. When, that's a when, that's not an if, that is a when. And likewise, you know, if we do find get a ceasefire in the Russia-Ukraine war, which we will do it. It's a matter of when. Again, that's going to be a huge catalyst for the actual markets. Those big three are not quite as big as that vaccine movement in November 2020. But actually, put them all together, and they're probably at least of equal, you know, equal stature. And they'll significantly change the optics and the appetite for risk in terms of assets. So if you're out the market when any of those three happen, and they will happen, if you're out the market, you're gonna miss a big chunk of gains very, very quickly, because the market won't wait around. It will just go hit the roof.
Yeah, but what part of me is thinking that this recovery won't be fast. I don't, because the economic problems will still exist for a while, you know. And if we compare sort of recessions gone previously based on sort of, you know, inflation and high interest rates, they don't tend to just slip away quickly, do they? They tend to last, and you have rebounds, big rebounds, and then sell-offs, and then rebounds. And then when inflation comes down back to normal, hopefully, which will take a while if they're going to get back down. So, you know, there will be a rally, I think. But then I think it may be quite volatile. It may come back down, not to the level it has been. It won't hit new lows, but there will be ups and downs, because there'll be lots of companies not reporting good figures. But against the backdrop of that, you have some good, you know, macro news, I suppose. But yeah, I don't think it'll be a steady, nice recovery. You know, I think it'll be tricky and hard and long, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I actually think it will be good. I think there's too many people like me and you who are pulling our horns back who don't need to, simply because it's a scare factor, and we just changed our behaviour. So I actually think that when that level of confidence does shift and the sentiment shifts, then I actually think that will, one, help risk appetite, but actually loosens up people's purse strings. I mean, we've only just started putting the heating on, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we can
have heating all day, every day, just as you know, it's a matter of sort of like, you know, it's sort of optics. So I think that a lot of people are doing that, and you're starting to, you know, you've seen it, that will continue whilst people are scared and just it's uncertain. Yeah. But once they start seeing that, you know, sort of, it just changes behaviour hugely.
Completely, absolutely. And do you know what? Like I said, we've now put our sort of the temperature down to around about, it kicks in at like 18 degrees now, if it goes below that of an evening. Whereas before, if we'd have it lower than that, it'd come on, the house would be warm. And now we put a jumper on first, and then, you know, let's not be cold, but let's not be warm. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing to be able to be more efficient with energy. And I think it focuses your lights on, you know, energy is not cheap, it's not free. And going forward, we need to change our policy in the UK, which is a good thing. But there we are. Cool. Yeah. Anything else up there?
Yeah, another one, which we've been following quite a lot, is Saeta. And they came out with the trading update. They've got their results, I think, interims in December. And they basically had a good set of, a good trading update, and they're concentrating on their major opportunities with ConMet out in the States to do e-hubs. They effectively, just as a, to rewind a bit, I mean, it's just for investors, Saeta do these sort of electric e-drive systems which go into, you know, electric vehicles, into large trucks, also into 2 to 3 wheeler, into bikes and stuff like that. And they've got sort of patented technology in all things electric motors, called the axial flux motors. But they, you know, they've got a huge sort of like flagship contract with the US's largest truck and trailer manufacturer called ConMet, and they're accelerating that development with them. And they should be able to do, you know, I mean, I don't know, they haven't seen the actual numbers, but significant volumes, hundreds of thousands over the next few years. And likewise, they're doing a similar sort of thing with 2 and 3 wheeler sort of scooters and tuk-tuks out in India. And they're just hopefully about to sign, you know, some more deals on top of the one they've already got, which should generate sort of, I think it's about 500,000 of unit sales over the next 5 years or so. So they're really knocking the ball out of the park, concentrating on their big greatest opportunities. And the shares have been sold off. And it just is crazy, really. They've had to reset the dial in terms of when that growth is going to come through, because the fact that they're smaller opportunities which are going to generate sort of like earlier term revenues, they've had to basically take that level of resource and put it into their bigger deal just as a matter of resource allocation, because they have the cash to be able to do that. So where they're looking at is about 10 million, just under 10 million of turnover for this year. And they had about, I think it's just under 4 last year. That's then increasing to over 30 the following year. So they're going to still see really strong growth. And on that 30, I think they'll be, you know, sort of be breaking even and profitable. So, you know, the future's very, very strong. But the shares, as you say, anything that is growth and not showing cash flow positives at the moment, even though they've got really good technology and strong, you know, track records has been sold off. So that one's a really good stock. But hey, you know, in this market, it's just a difficult place to be.
Yeah, but you know what? Just realizing just then that talking about these companies that have, you know, good future potential, but the market doesn't care. It's literally, it wants it now. It wants the profits now. That's it. Unless you've got profits now, we're not interested. And like I said, these companies, sooner or later, there will be hell of a steal, you know, when the market sentiment turns, it'll bounce massively. But right now, the market doesn't care about that. It said, we don't care about profits on the line. We want it now. And that's it. Unless a company's profitable now, they're just selling off. You know, so it is crazy.
Well, the shares traded about 70p, market cap of 72, you know, million pounds. And Canaccord have a price target, I think, of about 285p, so four times higher. And it just shows you that if you're a long-term investor that, you know, sort of wants exposure to sort of like all things electric vehicle, then these are as good as anybody, I think, to a certain extent.
No, because it just shows
you the quality of their actual, you know, sort of contracts. Yeah, here's one for you, actually, Justin. I was very lucky to have a chat with Paul Scott, who's a really big sort of like investor in, is quite an influential stock picker, a bit like yourself sort of stuff, but big investor in XP Factory. And I had a chat, and he loves it. I mean, I think you're in good company here, but I know
Do you know, I listened to his interview. It's very good, and I'm glad he did an interview because, you know, he's got a background in sort of retail and Ezra and all that. He majors on those stocks, so he knows a lot more about that sector than I ever will. And it was very interesting. And in fact, it's quite funny because, and I know he'd invested in them because in the chat group I had there, we're talking about Paul, talking about him there. And I thought, okay, that's good. And so I listened and he started talking to Richard, the CEO. And then he was surprised that XP, they had franchisees. I thought, how did he know that? But I'm glad he delved into that because he took it apart in brilliant detail, the franchisees models and how much they're getting from the landlords and all this stuff. And he broke it down in more detail than I ever could. And I think he was more impressed after that than beforehand. But yeah, I'm glad he's on board because, like I said, I liked, you know, when he was Escape Hunt because the rollout they had, the aggressive rollout was phenomenal. And they weren't just rolling out for the sake of it. Of course, they had to hit the numbers on every site. And they are doing that. And he said, like I said, last time I spoke to Richard Harpham, is they're seeing no evidence of slowing down, because their demographic is a lot younger, so they're less concerned, I suppose, about mortgage payments and all that stuff and heating bills. Their demographic is not slowing down. It's more an event as well, these kind of, you know, boom battle bars. It's not just a pub you go to. If you go to a local pub a couple of times a week, you may cut back on that. But these kind of things are events you go to with work or with a birthday party. Like, so you don't cut back on that. And like I said, you know, the rollout is phenomenal. And they are hitting their mature sort of the box economics margins a lot faster, because I was talking to Richard, he said, when we first started this, you know, back in 2021, November, we took over Boom Battle Bar. We were new to it as well, you know, but now we've opened up, 27 of them. And so we're quite good at it now. And we get to the stage where we bring experienced staff from the ones already opened to the new ones to help staff get up to speed there. And even those are going up to speed a lot faster and hitting their margins. And like I said, you know, the Escape Hunt owner-operated margins, I think they hit in 39% EBITDA, where they were aiming for 30. Boom Battle Bar is around about 22%. So it's a good business. And I think once they get it sorted in the UK, they probably go elsewhere, but like Escape Hunt is. But yeah, it's you know, so far, like you said, and Richard did say, I like the guy. He said, touch wood. He said, as yet, we haven't been hit by any cost of living crisis. We're not seeing that come through. But you know, and now we're going.
He did compliment you on your interview of Richard earlier, because that's what got him into the stock. So I think you've done a pretty good job there.
Justin. No, he said, I'd say it's worth listening to him because he knows a lot about leisure and all that stuff.
Yeah, he does. That's his real sweet spot. Except, absolutely. Yeah, if he's on board, then he can guarantee he's kicked the tires.
No, it was nice that he got into the franchisees thing. Speaker said he was really taken aback by the landlord contributions. I think it was like $500,000. Mm. It cost 800,000, I think it was, for Boom Battle Bar. They get $500,000 contribution for that. And literally, it's a one-year payback. And so, you know, that's a good model to have. So, so do you know what? Just saying, management of escape room, very clever, because they went from basically 8 escape rooms back in 2021 to now having, 23 at the end of this year and 27 Boom Battle Bars and franchises around the world. And they took advantage of the lockdowns. They wouldn't have been able to do this unless the lockdowns happened. So they're the kind of company that could take advantage of you know, dire economic times, and they'll continue to do that. But now they're going to get to, they're going to be sort of cash flow, EBITDA positivity anyway on the group level end of this year. So it's going to be
I'm not surprised, because the amount of mystery shopping you and Paul do on this one. So you've certainly kicked the tires and helped their profits, that's for sure.
I've yet to go to a Boom Battle Bar. Hopefully going to the one in Oxford Street when it opens. Richard has got an invite, but he has to get back to me on that. But that's a massive one in this, you know, centre of town.
Well, you should do a joint one with Paul and televise it.
Yeah.
Have an axe throwing competition with Paul.
Competitive gaming, yes. Let's see who does better at that.
That would work really well.
Cool. I've had a lot of news from my stuff. You know, just looked at Truefin just now. Their Sotago just won an award for best fintech lending. I just thought that's very good. It's nice to know that.
Don't tell me the shares went down.
Shares went down. And they've also just released their PlayStack just released a new game called Entropy. And that was hitting like Steam. I don't know if you know Steam or Stream. It's one of the gamers' platforms that show people adding games to their watch list before it comes out. Yeah. And that hit number one. And it's a huge platform. Steam or Stream, I think it is. That's come out today. Shares went down. So, okay, yeah, but that's what we're saying. The companies like this. They're not going to appreciate future. At the moment, the market isn't appreciating future, you know, like it was before. So I think companies now, if you're looking short term and you're researching companies you haven't bought yet, I think look at companies generating cash, because at the moment, they aren't appreciating companies with excellent potential to go out 2-3 years from now. They're not. But there again, there's bargains there to be had as well. So, the commercial contract with Sotago and Lloyds and Sage kick in at this quarter, so they will start generating, you know, revenue and cash, and they'll get profitable. And there we go. Hopefully, you know. But like I said, it's hard work for pre-profitable companies at the moment. Very hard work, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, coming up to Guy Fawkes night, there's plenty of bonfires, isn't there? There's plenty of sort of like, you know, fireworks going off.
And anything else? Any other companies looking
at? No, I think we're there. That was covered everything. Got big week next week. I've got Argentex, who I own, coming up next week. And then there's a bunch of other stocks as well. So we're still right in the middle of the earnings season. And actually, the big data point next week is the CPI out of the US midweek. I think it's about Thursday. So keep your eyes peeled for that lagging indicator. But clearly, it's going to move markets. They always do. It always does.
Okay, and one more question. But by the time this goes out, probably the Bank of England will have raised their interest rates. You know, 3/4 of a percentage point is expected. Do you think they should go harder than that, or do you think that'll be that's okay, or do you think they should go harder than that? I mean, if they go lower than that, it'll be a bit of worry, I suppose. Either way, if they go too hard, the market say, "Oh, bigger worries out than we thought." If they don't go as hard, the people thought they should have gone harder than that. You know, so what's your thoughts?
It all comes down to what they think in terms of the inflation trajectory, and my gut feel is that we've seen the back of inflation. I don't think they should go sort of like, you know, I mean, the market's basically saying, isn't it? I think it's going to peak out at just between 4.5% to 5% is where the peak is for next year. I mean, it's come down a lot from what Liz Truss did, no doubt about it. But actually, I would say Lloyds Bank, when they put out some really good sort of like projections for the next 2 or 3 years, are about spot on. They did this last week, and they reckon the Bank of England is going to peak out at 4%. And I think they're at currently what is it, 275? So if they add 75 basis points, they get to 3.5, and that, and therefore they'll get, you know, another 0.5%. It looks about, feels about right, 4%.
Yeah. They well, don't next, want next two or three meetings, and we will be at peak interest rates, I assume.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping. So I actually think the market's got it wrong. I think, you know, you'll start seeing, I'm hoping you'll start seeing that come through the swap rate. You know, that'll bring it down, and that'll help the housing market and stuff like that. So it comes down to whether they really do need to sort of like, you know, take out sort of inflation.
Yeah. I just saw that the Lloyds thing you posted, by the way. And did Lloyds say they expect house prices to drop by 8% or something like that? Or,
yeah, top peaks yeah. trough 10%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking people think, oh, no, they're, hang on a sec. They went up like 13-14% last year. So it's, it's not a big deal.
And mortgage rates are coming down. Well, they're starting to roll over because the swap rates come down from Liz Truss. So you'll start seeing them come from over 6% into your sort of 5% for 2 and 5 year mortgages. So that should sort of help. One big issue, I guess, is that you have got synchronized bank tightening around the world, the Fed, the Bank of England, the ECB, and all this sort of stuff. And I think that you've got to not just look at each country in isolation, you've got to look at it as an aggregate. And what's happening is the whole world is nailing inflation. And I think even if the Bank of England stays relatively dovish, I think inflation will roll over because globally it's getting absolutely whacked by the US. Anyway, that's my big view. So coming back to the original question, 75 looks baked in. Yeah. But I'm hoping we're going to top at 4 rather than 4.5, 5.
Yeah. I think this time next year the banks will have to ease back, I think, because they've gone very hard.
Yes, yes. You and I are the same. I think we're optimists. We're paranoid optimists, Justin.
Exactly. You've got to be to have your money in stocks. It's like, you know, otherwise you'll be sitting in cash. Marvellous. Thanks for that, Paul. Speak in a couple of weeks.
Take care. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want with PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.